Hello, this is James Throgmorton, and today I want to talk about a subject that is important to all people that claim to be Christian, to be followers of God, to be have God as their example. And primarily I'm going to deal with the book of Galatians. The book of Galatians is probably one of the hardest books in all the Bible to understand, and one of the reasons that people do not understand the book of Galatians is because they don't realize that the book of Galatians was written to Gentiles. The Galatian church was a Gentile congregation, and so they had a lot of pressures on them living among the Gentiles, and their fellow citizens being Gentile, not of Jewish origin, and probably even in that day and age a lot of anti-Semitism. And so when they adopted the law of God and moved away from idolatry and paganism, it caused a lot of friction. And so they had a unique set of problems. And so certainly today I'm not trying to go into detail about the book of Galatians, but I need to state that fact before I proceed, because we're going to deal with just one aspect that is covered very well in the book of Galatians about our own human conduct. You know, how we treat other people and how we deal with our own problems and our own life and our relationship with other people, and particularly our relationship with people in the church. You know, this is the third day of September, and the tremendous tragedy, national disaster that happened in New Orleans is on all of our minds. We've watched it on television, and we've seen people, human beings, at their best and at their worst. And we've seen carnality and selfishness at its height. And we've seen actually the opposite, too, of people that sacrifice their own welfare, their own comfort, to help other people. What I want to talk about is the fruits of the Spirit. The Holy Spirit, what makes a spirit in human beings that separates them from animals? But in someone that has the Spirit of God, that is converted, there is a spirit from God. You know, a lot of people claim to have the Spirit. They claim to be spiritual. Well, spirituality is not some sort of an emotional thing, or it's not a reaction, it's not being charismatic. Somebody that's charismatic doesn't necessarily mean they're spiritual. In fact, far from it. You're less likely to find a charismatic person that is really spiritual. They'll lie to you and tell you they are, and probably lie to themselves and think they are. But we're going to talk about the fruits of the Spirit. We find this in the fifth chapter of the book of Galatians. And before we talk about it, I want to talk about human nature and how we are and what our character is. You know, we're all born and come into this life as little babies, and we don't know anything. We don't know anything about anything except what our parents expose us to, and later on in society, and we grow up, or some of us do. Some people never grow up. But there's basically three ways that we grow up. You know, you grow up physically, you learn to walk, you learn to talk, you begin to be able to use your hands and your fingers, and you know, kids have this inherent drive in them to play and to do things, and this is all part of growing up. And then you grow up physically, and then you begin to grow up mentally up until you get to be 21, 22 years old. I think all of us know that as you come through those teenage years, they're pretty rough. Usually people don't really start to mature till they have kids of their own, and that makes them grow up pretty quick. And some people, like I say, never grow up. I know of somebody, I could mention his name, he's related to my wife, and is actually a parent, that he's older than I am, probably about 70-something years old, and last time I talked to him, he still had the mind, in a lot of respects, of a 8 or 9 year old in his wisdom. dealing with things and his maturity. Men actually mature slower than women do. And so we grow up into maturity where we're no longer so self-centered. Being a parent, if you're a good parent, it'll bring to a halt some of that self-centeredness that people have. And, you know, after our kids grow up, we go back to being self-centered. Yeah, that's true. That's very true. And that's something that as Christians, as followers of God, of having God's Spirit, we're supposed to be able to do. We're supposed to be able to subdue that carnality. Now, before we proceed and talk about that a little bit, I want to talk about the fact that we do have the imprint of our parents on us. You know, all of us, when we're teenagers and young and full of vim and vinegar, as people say, we think we can do everything, think we know everything, and everybody's that way. I've never met an exception, I don't think. That's natural. It's a good thing that we wouldn't go out and do a lot of things. And I remember when I was a teenager and up until I was probably 30 years old, that I used to look at my dad. And I could find all sorts of things that he did wrong. I was ashamed of certain things he did. You know, people get ashamed of their parents, and I was sort of ashamed of maybe the way he dressed or the way he talked or things that he did. I thought I knew better. And you know, as time has went by, and my dad's been dead for a long time, but if I could sit down and talk to him today, and we always had an excellent relationship and could communicate with each other, but if I could sit down and talk to him today, it would be quite a different story, because it would be two old men sitting down talking on equal footing. And you know what I found out in the last 30 some odd years, the last 35 years? I found out that now I'm just like he was. I have all the attributes that I used to criticize in him. And that's something, you know, the Worldwide Church of God actually used to teach, and it sounded a little harsh, but it taught that before you got married, you needed to go look at your prospective mate's family. You need to look at their mom and dad, and if it was a man, you need to really go look at his dad, and if it was a woman, you need to go look at the mom. And you need to look at both of them, because the person you're going to marry, unless some miraculous thing happened and they came to a realization about it, they were going to wind up being just like their parents. And that's pretty well true. That's genetically true. It happens. The Bible talks about and a lot of people have problems in marriages because as they go on into the marriage, they revert back to being what they wasn't when they first got married, because they'd put up a facade. And so we, as human beings, and that's something that studying the Bible can help us understand, that we're going to have that genetic tendency to be like our parents. And if our parents have faults, we're going to find ourselves having those same faults and weaknesses when we get older. 9 out of 10 times happens that way. I remember one time I was attending a seminar in Memphis, Tennessee, and there was a lot of worldly ministers there. It was a large group. There was probably 500-600 people there. It was in a gigantic auditorium, and they were talking about the subject of the moment. The presentation that morning was about adopted children and children that hadn't had parents and had been in an institution and that were adopted by family. The man was saying that it was a terrible mistake of the way that it's done a lot of times, that they don't consider who that child's parents were, and they never tell the parents that are adopting the child, they don't tell them about birth parents. What was being covered that day was the fact that they should do that they should tell the child's history of his parents to the adopting parents so that they would know what his weaknesses were. Because as a parent, when we have children, we have a tendency, and a good tendency, it's natural, that we're always very concerned about child making mistakes that we may have made. And so we will go to a lot of trouble to try to direct our children away from that. Well, if you adopted a child, that's not the thing that's important, because the child will have a whole set of different problems than you had that you're totally unaware of. And so you will do absolutely nothing to try to steer the child in a different direction. Now, that's one thing that we're going to look at today, is the fact that we all have the choice of making changes. We have the choice. It's a matter of whether we have the character and the guts to do it. Anybody can change if they will and if they want to. You know, it's like a drug addict or an alcoholic. They have to want to before they'll ever do it. Most people are pretty satisfied in their old carnal state. Anyway, back to this meeting that I attended, I thought it was really interesting that in the presentation, the man just asked for people to volunteer from the audience just by raising their hands, and then later he called on them, and he just asked in the audience how many people were there that worked children's homes and orphanages and things like that. And I was totally astounded. There was about 20 people in the audience that held up their hand that they worked in these sort of institutions. And so he asked them if they would stand up. I don't know how many he asked. And then he just asked a blanket question where they could all raise their hands. Every person to the man that stood up, I don't think there were any ladies there that day, not just simply because it was a minister's meeting. Everyone stated and agreed to the fact that everybody that they had come through their institutions had the same problems that their parents had. And see, the institutions were not barred from learning the problems of the parents. It was only when they are adopted and sent out to society that they put up that blinder, that door that kept them happening. And everyone, I was totally astounded, said that if a child came in there and their parents were thieves and cheats, they'd wind up having a weakness in that direction of thieves and cheats. You know, the Bible talks about that. It talks about the transgressions of the fathers being passed on to the sons for generation after generation. That's one of the reasons that human beings are in such dire circumstances, is because we not only have to answer for our own problems, we have to answer for the problems of our ancestors. Because our ancestors, right back to the Garden of Eden, rejected God and told him to get out of their face a long time ago, and he's pretty well complied, except where he's working out his plan. Now, as New Testament Christians, I'll use that terminology so everybody will understand basically what I'm talking about. As New Testament Christians, as converted people, people that are trying to obey God and trying to do what He says to do, we have a choice. We have a choice of changing our character, because the New Covenant, and that's a subject for another day about the New Covenant, because only those that are converted have access to the New Covenant today. That New Covenant breaks that cycle of the transgression of the fathers. In fact, there's prophecies in the Bible that plainly say that the time will come when that won't happen. When the parents won't eat the bitter grapes and the children's teeth be set on edge. That's a very blunt statement, you know, that the parents ate sour grapes, but the children are the ones that wind up getting the taste. That won't be true, that each person will be responsible for his own conduct. And that's really what I want to talk about today, is the fact that we can be responsible for our own conduct. We don't have to grow up and be and have the weaknesses of our predecessors, of our ancestors. We don't have to do that. We don't have to be just concerned about ourselves. And you know, I've seen in a small way, being a minister for many years in the Church of God, and being in the Church of God for upwards of 40 years, I've seen as much raw carnality in the Church of God as I have, as you see out in society, and sometimes more, because people don't want to be different. They want to think about themselves and themselves alone. I've seen some pure carnality. I'll give an example. I pastored a congregation a few years ago, and it had a lady in that congregation that was hot-natured. She wanted air conditioning, absolutely freeze everybody out. Well, we actually had somebody here that was that way, that was very hot-natured. In fact, we've had a couple of men in this congregation in Poconos that were very hot-natured. And you know what they did? They went out and bought them a fan. I think one of the fans is still around here, and didn't turn the air conditioner down to where it froze everybody to death. And they pointed the fan at them, and you know, there'd be some people in the congregation that the fan would bother, and we worked around it, a very Christian approach to working that out. But this lady wasn't that way. She turned the air conditioner as low as it would go, froze everybody to death, particularly the ladies that wore dresses and things like that. The men fared a little better because they had suits on, and she wouldn't have it any other way. She insisted to be in that way because her comfort was more important than anything else in the world. Her raw, pure carnality. What she did, her solution, was she bought some cheap blankets for the ladies in the church to put on. Now that's raw carnality in its mildest form, and hey, she might run across this tape. I don't care. What I should have done is told her then, but I wasn't as brave as I should have been, maybe. But raw carnality, people concerned only with themselves and their own comfort. Now, we've seen a lot of that. This was a tremendous catastrophe, and that we saw in New Orleans, and lack of patience and just trying to blame everybody. I really haven't heard anybody blame God yet. I'm sure it's out there. They've slammed God's name around a lot. And if you and I were in those circumstances, yeah, we'd be uncomfortable. But discomfort and pain is just our body telling us we need to change our circumstances. And I realize that it's hard for any of us to be sitting in our comfortable homes, air conditioning and water and electricity and all the comforts of life, to understand what these people are going through, and particularly in the United States of America, because we're a spoiled nation and a spoiled, very spoiled generation. You know, you see the critics on TV. I know I saw one that was some guy up there in a smooth suit and tie and a nice white collar, and he was dressed to the hilt, and he was being so critical of what everything was doing. Why didn't he get rid of the suit and tie and get him on some overalls and go down there and help? He wasn't doing a thing. He wasn't doing anything but sitting there criticizing. Now, that's pure, raw carnality. He is no different than the looters out there. For the guys driving around the pickup trucks, the carnality is just the same. Now, enough said about that, talking about carnality in the world, because what I want to talk about is I want to talk about carnality in the Church of God. I just gave the example of the lady that was so carnal that her comfort was more important than everybody else's comfort. You know, I've noticed that over the years. I've been a part of getting people to the feast and things, and people can get so upset over the least little things that upset what they're doing. They never take it into the whole picture of the whole group. And I'm not talking about everybody. I'm talking about some examples. I remember one time at a feast, and we had a church group down there that was sharing a house, and there was two ladies in there that got in a fight. They got in a fight like a couple little kids. They stayed awake all night because one of them get up and turn the air conditioner on and the other get up and turn it off. Just spiteful. You know, one of them could have got some cover. They could have compromised and got it somewhere in between. They could have opened a window. They could have done all sorts of things. But no, they lost whole night's sleep. Each one of them thinking that they were Christians. We'll use that terminology. Don't have what I want to eat. I know of two women that stayed together one time at the feast. It's nobody that was in this room. In fact, I got more sense than talk about people in this room. but they were staying in a motel room, and I think they had a little kitchenette, and they had a refrigerator in there, and they fought all during the feast. And after they got home to the feast, about one of them would get a bite of the other one's food or get somebody's milk or somebody's, you know. And I just have to shake my head and say, they've missed the point. They've missed the point, or that things just wasn't suitable. Now, we all get a little grouchy sometimes when we feel bad. There's not a human being that doesn't get grouchy. But, you know, you can control that. You can control that. You can not jump down somebody's throat. You don't have to. Go find you a closet and go back in there and shut the door and yell a few times if you got to. But you don't have to. You have a choice. A mature person has a choice of how they act and what they do. And we're usually so unwilling to do that. The ministry taught me more about that than anything other than all the years I spent working in the Boy Scouts and working with a bunch of kids and parents and those things. That taught me a lot of patience and a lot of dealing with problem situations, dealing with catastrophes sometimes. I remember one time that when I was a Boy Scout, went on a camping trip, and the scoutmaster camped us in a gully, and it came a downpour. And of course, my mom and all the other kids' mom sent all this stuff with them. I had this big old heavy quilt that my grandmother had made, and it got soaked. Well, I needed a forklift to get that thing and do anything with it. And I remember how hard that was. I had to get help to get our gear out of that gully and get it up to an old barn up there. And it was just terrible for kids. And I was a pretty hefty kid and wasn't a little kid at all. Probably was 13, 14 years old. And, you know, it didn't bother us as bad then as it bothers people now. Because when their comfort zone gets all messed up, they don't know what to do. And so the point I'm bringing out is that if you claim to have the Spirit of God and don't use it, because God's Spirit can have a calming effect on you, it won't necessarily take away a headache. It won't necessarily take away an upset stomach. But it should give you the common horse sense to know how to deal with that and not make somebody else suffer because you're feeling bad or because you're in a bad mood or something just didn't suit you and your mood. And so what I want to talk about, and I'll read it here in Galatians, because here's the place in the Bible that it's clearly stated in just a few verses about the fruits of the Spirit. Let's look in verse 13 of Galatians, the fifth chapter. For you, brethren, have been called to liberty, only I did not use liberty as an opportunity for the flesh, but through love serve one another. The law of God and the truth of God is liberty. It gives you control. You're no longer a slave to the world or the society around or to yourself, your own carnality. You can get freed from your own carnality to the extent to be a nicer person. You know, somebody that's been in the church all their life or any amount of time and never changes. You know, I know some people, and I could call some names. There's people in our present configuration of the church and our congregations that I could talk about that have changed more than you can imagine. If they could actually go back and see themselves the day they walked in the door at church, they wouldn't recognize themselves because they've changed so much. I could call names. I don't want to embarrass anybody, although this is not anything to their discredit. This is to their credit. They have grown. They have matured. They're like the little child that grows up physically and mentally, and then we have to grow up spiritually, which we can't do that without God. And so people that come in the church and attend church, do all the things that we're supposed to do as Christians, they if they never change, they haven't done anything. You know, that's the way I am about business. I've been in business a long time. And a business that is not going forward is actually going backwards. And that's true of any kind of organization, it's true of a marriage. If you don't go forward and make the relationship grow, you're going backwards. You're going backwards. You're not going forward. And so let's continue here. Yeah, we have a liberty to not have to grow up and be just, and I'm talking about grow up in maturity and spirituality. We don't have to wind up like our parents. We don't have to be like our parents. We can keep the good things and get rid of some of the bad things. We can have control. We have the liberty to control ourselves. But, you know, as carnal human beings, and there's other scriptures talk about how the Apostle Paul said that he himself had to war against that carnality. It's a war. It's a battle. It's like somebody giving up alcohol or drugs or stop smoking. I've never had to deal with the smoking, so I don't really understand that. I've watched people deal with it. It's a very hard thing for some people to do. Some people it's easy for them to do, but other people it's really a struggle. And the same way, if you're a grouch, then you're going to have to want to not to be that way. I'll use myself as an example because it's hard for me to throw rocks at myself. But one thing that you can be sure of is the fact that you have to want to change. Something that changed about me and my tenure in the church is something that I went backwards for a long time because of I had to deal with a lot of hard situations. The ministry put a lot of pressure on me. And I lost a lot of my sense of humor, which was a bad thing, not a good thing. I think in the last several years, I've regained some of that sense of humor and have an ability to take things a little lighter, step back and get a good, healthy laugh at myself once in a while. And I think that I've improved. But I had to get to a point where I really wanted to do that. And so I understand that this is not an easy thing. But we have the tools to do it with. We have the tools. In fact, you don't have to be converted to do it. You can do it if you decide that, hey, I want to be a better person. I want to be a fairer person. I want to just do better. So we saw that in the 13th verse that we had liberty. For all the law is fulfilled in one word, even in this, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Turn the air conditioner down. Don't buy him a blanket. But if you bite and devour one another, beware lest you be consumed by one another. Same principle, you live by the sword, you die by the sword. And people that are like this are never happy. I say then, walk in the Spirit, that you shall not fulfill the lust of the flesh. Now, the minute I read that, everybody starts thinking the sexuality, that's not what it's talking about at all. That could be something that's involved here, but that's not what it's talking about. It's talking about your personal human conduct and the way you are with other people and how sulky and moody and all other sorts of other things that you are. The flesh lusts against the Spirit and the Spirit against the flesh, for these are contrary one to another, so that you do not do the things that you wish. Like Paul said, what you want to do sometimes, and we're all that way, hey, we've made hurt people's feelings, and you can't keep from hurting people's feelings. I mean, the easiest way to hurt people's feelings is to tell them the truth. We all know that we do things from time to time that while we're doing them, we know that we're really goofing up. We're really making a mistake. Can any of us ever be that honest, even with ourselves, to admit that we're that human? This is something that God created in man for God's purpose, because man has to learn the wrong way of doing things thoroughly by doing them the wrong way. And we all do. For the flesh lusts against the Spirit, and the Spirit against the flesh. And these are contrary to one another, so that you do not do the things that you wish. Repeat that twice, because it's so important. That's the whole focal point of what we're talking about. If you are led by the Spirit, if you say, you know, people out in the world and out in the religions of the world, the so-called Christian religions of the world, they want to ask, are you born again? Do you have the Spirit? Do you know Jesus? those questions. Well, you know, maybe we ought to ask ourselves some of those questions sometimes, because if you are, your actions will show it. Your actions will show it. The way you conduct your life and your relationship with your fellow human beings inside the church and outside the church will show it. But if you are led by the Spirit, you are not under the law. Now, this is one of these places that people that don't believe in keeping the law go astray. They say, see here, Paul says you're not under the law. Well, you're not under the penalty of the law if you're led by the Spirit, because you'll have Christ's sacrifices to help you deal with it, and you'll have also have God's Spirit to help you put down your carnality. But now, the works of the flesh are evident, which are adultery, fornication, uncleanness, licentiousness, or lawlessness. You know, it can involve sexual misconduct, but that's not the primary subject here. And all these Victorian people with these self-righteous little old ladies and little old men that we see around from time to time will automatically zero in on the sexuality and miss the rest of it completely. Yeah, that's included. Idolatry. You know, they look at that and say adultery and fornication and uncleanliness. Well, what's uncleanliness? Well, filthy language might be part of it, and you don't even have to talk about anything sexually oriented to have filthy language. You can just be slamming God's name. Filthy language, that's the most filthy language you can get, is to take God's name in vain. Licentiousness, lawlessness, idolatry, adopting other gods, other religions, paganism, sorcery, which is actually rebellion against God, hatred, contentions, jealousy. Contentions are sometimes translated, I think, in other translations as variances and emulation, outbursts of wrath, self-ambitions, divisions and heresy. Make your own religion. Try to take people away from God. That's what heresy is. Envy, murders. Well, if you don't have many murders taking place in the church. You know, there was an incident of shooting in one of the churches of God some time ago. But that's not what it's talking about here. It's talking about if you hate your brother, you've already killed him in your heart. What Jesus Christ said, murders. And certainly people that have committed the physical act would apply to them. Drunkenness, revelings, and the like, of which I tell you beforehand, just as I told you in times past, that those who practice such things will not inherit the kingdom of God. If you want a further explanation of that, you can just go over to the end of the book of Revelation. It'll tell you who won't be there, who won't be in the New Jerusalem, and all these different categories that we've talked about here will be listed in a little bit of different terminology, but they'll be there. Now, that's the part of human nature that we want to get rid of. And you know, where the real problem comes with human being is people in the Church of God, is they look at that and say, well, I don't do any of those things. Well, hopefully we don't. Most of us don't. Although I've seen nearly all those things take place by people that claim to be in the Church of God in my years of experience. That's something we can look at and say, well, I don't have any of those problems. I don't do that. I've never done any of those things. Well, if we analyze them, there's some things in there that all of us have done. Hopefully we haven't done the adultery and the idolatry and the sorcery and the hatred. And yeah, but when we were back in the religions of the world, yeah, we did all that. We committed adultery against God and His religion and all those things. So yeah, they can apply to us if we really get to analyze them, because self-righteousness is the hardest of all sins to deal with, because it keeps you from seeing your sins. Think, oh, well, I'm a good person. I'm a good person. I wouldn't possibly do that. Yeah, you would if circumstances were right, unless you have the character to stand up against it. Now let's talk about the fruits of the Spirit. This is how we should act and behave. This is how we judge ourselves and our own conduct, and we also can judge the conduct of other people. Some of the examples I've talked about, it was evident that these people didn't use the Spirit of God. Spirit is love, outgoing concern. I'm talking about the two ladies fighting over the air conditioner one night. And the other examples I gave, joy. Most people don't see that this is one of the fruits of the Spirit that's so important. Are you a happy person? Are you a happy person? Or do you just go around moping all the time and grumbling and woe is me and this sort of thing? Joy is people that are converted and are using the Spirit of God are happy people. Now that doesn't mean that when they feel bad they don't get sick and they don't get grouchy and all sorts of other things that can happen to us, but their overall outlook on life is happy. And when you see them, they're a happy person. They greet you with a smile on their face. Peace. People that use God's Spirit don't like to fight. They stay away from fight. They don't go out and do things to stir up a fight. Long-suffering. Waiting it out. You know, we've just seen that in New Orleans. A lot of people that had to suffer through a lot of things and, you know, I'd say the majority of them did pretty good at that. That sometimes you have to wait. This is one of the hardest things for people to deal with. And I know this personally because I've had to deal with it in the ministry. I've had to go through a lot of long suffering on things. And it's not easy. It's hard to do, to put up with things that, well, I don't want to go into all that because I'm not carrying a chip around on my shoulder, but I understand about long-suffering, that you have to be able to deal with that and come out smiling. Kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such there is no law. And, of course, self-control is the last thing mentioned there, and that's what's important because that's what we're really talking about, is that we have the liberty and the freedom to control ourselves if we're willing to do it. If we're willing to do it. And those who are Christ have crucified the flesh or killed the flesh. I'll remind you, as I always do, that word crucified is a Latin word and really is not the correct word there. And those who are Christ have crucified the flesh with its passions and desires. If we live in the Spirit, let us also walk in the Spirit. Let us not become conceited, provoking one another, envying one another. Envy has caused more problems in the church probably than any other thing other than personal pride. And of course, personal pride is necessary for envying. So again, the point today is the fact that we can control ourselves with the help of God's Spirit if we want to do it and if we're willing to do it. And that requires some character development on our own part. We don't have to grow up and have all the problems that our fathers had, or that our mothers had, or that our grandparents had. When I look at my dad, well, what he stood for, and I don't have a lot of things to that I don't want to have inherited from him. But I still have to be have the opportunity with conversion and being called by God to be my own person and try to mimic Jesus Christ and God the Father and not have to be like any other human being, to be like God. This has been James Throgmorton speaking to you for the Churches of God.